Hello everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and today we have a special episode. We're talking about a project that's very close to my heart and we're talking to Chris Conder. And Chris, can you tell us what your project is?
Our project is Broadband for the Rural North, which is B4RN. We call it BAN, and it's a project to bring a really good internet connection to a very rural area in the uplands of Lancashire.
Okay, and the website is B, the digit or the numeral 4, R for Romeo, N for November, .org.uk. Now, I just opened up Lancashire here on Google Maps, and I see a lot of roads down the south. Where would you be, more or less?
We're at the very top corner of Lancashire. We're just on the border of Yorkshire and Cumbria.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of roads up there.
There aren't a lot of roads, no. And we're working mainly in the, like I say, the upland areas where all the sheep farmers are. So we have a lot of family farms up there, and they're very sort of spread about. People have lived there for generations. I mean, my husband's family's been here for 4 generations, and his family have actually farmed in the Lune Valley since 1426.
Wow.
So people are really heathed here. They don't want to move. If they live on a farm, they want to stay living and working on a farm. And the only way you can do it these days is if you've got an internet connection, because you have to do your VAT online, you have to do all your DEFRA stuff online. You know, you just have to be online these days. And so we've done various things. We've used satellites. We've used 3G, because even though we can't get it on our phones, you can buy gadgets that will bring 3G to you. But when the cells get full, they don't work very well. We've found with the satellites, they work out too expensive, because if the kids come home from school and it's turned on, they can use up your full day's data transfer allowance. And then when you come in to do your work at night, you're throttled down because it's all used up. And if you want it to go faster again, you've got to sort of put more money in the slot. And if the kids get your credit card password and authenticate it to soup it up again, you can run up bills of thousands of pounds if you're not careful. So what we're finding is the farmers are turning the satellites off in the daytime. So we've also built a community mesh network, and we feed an area around me with Wi-Fi, which is how I'm online at the moment. And it's been a really interesting project. We've been doing it since 2005, but we can't get enough backhaul to keep us all happy. So we have to tell people not to use video in the daytime so the businesses can carry on working. And for instance, if all the kids came on now and all went on YouTube, this conversation would drop off because the network just couldn't cope with it. So it served its purpose, but it's time's come now and we're moving on to fibre.
So
it's the only way to do it properly.
So no doubt BT will be running up loads of trucks up there to help you out with this.
I wish. No, the BT, any telecommunications company, big company, isn't interested at all in people like us. We're a minority. We're very expensive to service with new infrastructure, and they want to make the most of the infrastructure they already have, which is the copper telephone network. And so they can suit that up to some degree in urban areas where there are a lot of people by putting a cabinet in. And so that's what they're doing. They're giving the people who already have broadband faster broadband. And for a while they'll be quite happy with that, but then they'll realize that it's not really that fast and they'll need more, and then they'll have to fiber up the cities. But even when they do that, they still won't do anything for us, because they've enough on the plates dealing with the majority. The minority really do have to sort of look after themselves.
Okay, so what's the plan?
The plan is, well, we started off, we had to find out if the people wanted this and were prepared to work for it, because it's
okay, sorry, could you tell me what this is now exactly?
Broadband, internet access,
yes,
of any description,
yeah,
that's affordable and is useful. They can get broadband themselves by buying a satellite if they want, or using 3G, or trying to get a Wi-Fi connection beamed up from somebody else who has it. But we wanted to know if the people wanted proper broadband owned by themselves, owned by the people, and future-proof, so that it was built so that it would do the job once and do it properly, rather than a sort of stopgap solution. And so first thing we did, we did sort of a mail shot to everybody, a flyer, a printed flyer. And there's a local initiative here called Area of Natural Beauty. It's run by the council, and they keep the countryside looking nice. You know, they're paid to do this work, like countryside rangers, I suppose you could call. And they have funding to help community projects get started. I mean, they wouldn't fund the broadband, but they'd help you to get it started. And they'll give you money to put an advert in the paper and print flyers and things like that. And so they gave us a grant to get these flyers printed, and we delivered them to every single house in our parishes. And there's 8 parishes joined together for this project, because we need quantity. If we're going to build a network, there's got to be enough people on it to make it sustainable, otherwise we're wasting our time. So we designed these flyers ourselves and got them printed, and the volunteers, because we've volunteers in every parish, they delivered them house to house, so everybody got one. I would imagine at least 50% just went in the bin without even being read. But we've this theory that you've got to tell people 7 times, or they've got to see your logo 7 times before they actually start to think about what you're trying to tell them. And so there was the local newspaper adverts and the flyers and parish meetings and posters and stickers in cars, because we made those ourselves. We just printed them and laminated them and put little sticky tabs on and got them into people's cars and in the windows of the houses. And we made little signs with lollipop sticks and stuck them round about the place. So just to raise awareness that we existed. And then people would say, what's all this barn stuff that I keep seeing? Anyway, so the theory was that we had to know if there were enough people who wanted a good broadband service. And we put a beanstalk on the website, and we said there's 1,500 houses in these parishes, and if we get to the sort of the halfway mark, then that means we'll, if we build this network, we can run it and afford to run it. And so if we get half of you to register an interest, then we'll go ahead. And we couldn't do that until we had, we couldn't start spending money that we hadn't got, registering a company and getting registered for VAT. And
yeah, I understand.
We didn't do any of that until we knew the people wanted it. So we gave them a deadline for sort of end of September, October last year, to get enough numbers, and enough people did register. So we went to the next stage, which was forming the company, registering the company, all the legal stuff you have to do. And then we said, right, well, we'll issue shares, and if enough people buy shares, we'll start building the core network. We're not trying to raise the whole 2 million in one go. We need, say, £200,000 to build the core. And so if we get that, we will then start to buy equipment, and then we will start to build the core. So enough people actually registered, far more than we expected. Bought shares, I mean, and we got £300,000. We needed £204,000, I think we needed. So we went ahead and we bought all the materials we would need, the ducting to build the core.
Can I just stop you there and ask you 2 questions? The first is, what type of company did you set up? Is this a profit company or?
No, we set it up. We'd had all these parish meetings. So first of all, we went to the parish council and we said to them, is your community interested in broadband? And they all said yes. And then, because they'd had lots of letters and complaints and everything else about broadband, so we said, well, if you will put on an event and provide tea and cake, we will come and present to your parishioners our plan. So they all did, and we went and we presented our plan to the people of the parishes, and then they could ask questions, and they gave us feedback and they gave us ideas, and we then decided that the only company that we could form, it's registered with the FSA, Financial Services Authority, and it's a community benefit company. And the difference between that and the other sort of CIC is some CICs are for the benefit of the shareholders and some CICs are for the benefit of the community. And ours is the one, it's a co-op, that's for the benefit of the community.
What's a CIC for?
Community Interest Company.
Okay, yep.
And the difference is whatever income over expenditure we make has to be returned to the community. It's not returned to the shareholders. The shareholders get a fair return of interest for their subscription. They'll always get a fair return, but they'll never get a massive return. Any money we make has to go back into where it's come from. Mm-hmm. And because everybody who's bought a share, whether it's 100 shares or 20,000 shares, they only have one vote. So everybody in the community who's got a share can come to the meetings and vote as to where the money will go if and when a profit is made. And so if the community says, well, the church roof is falling in, we want to mend the church roof, then that's what we'll do if that's what they vote for. And if they say, well, we've made all this money, we want to help another community and get them some decent broadband, and then that means we'll make even more money to mend our church roofs in the future, we'll do that. And if they say, we've helped enough people now, we're big enough, we'd rather have a reduction in price, well, we'll do that. It's not, it's to all of us, not one of us. That's the sort of company we've formed, and we've got these very legally binding rules, and we can't change our minds or change the rules. Those are our rules, and those are what we have to stick to.
Okay, that's fantastic. And another thing I'd like to ask is, you're rolling out fiber optic. Would it not be just simpler to roll out something like microwave, which is, or MMDS or something like that?
Well, that's what we do now.
Is that not meeting the bill, or why is that?
No. It's very hard work. Yeah, we've been doing it since 2005. For one thing, you've got to have the scale of numbers to get the backhaul in at an affordable price. So that means you've got to tap into fibre somewhere to get a decent backhaul. Radio stuff falls off. Even the best design stuff. We've just moved on to nanos, which are Ubiquiti kit. And they're very, very good at nanos, and it's made our network a lot better, but it's still not good enough for tomorrow's needs. It gets us by. We're very happy with it. We're very pleased with it. But then when something goes wrong, how do you find out what's wrong? You know, it can take you 10 minutes to just find out what's wrong with it. And it's nearly always a case of telling them to turn it off and on again, and that fixes it. But it is labour intensive.
Yes.
Because it's too small to have permanent staff, you see. You've got to have a network that's big enough to pay somebody to look after it properly. You've got to be able to pay the right technicians. And with fibre, there's very little goes wrong. It's not like Wi-Fi or a copper phone network in an old exchange that's falling down with really old infrastructure. This is a brand new fibre network, and it will just work.
And you're going to lay an individual... can you tell me a little bit about the network? It's going to be... Are you going to be putting in the fibres yourself, or just putting in the ducting, or...?
We're doing everything. And what skills we haven't got in the community, we'll get people trained up for those skills. But we're finding that we actually do have the skills in the community. You know, we even had a qualified fibre splicer contact us the other day. Oof. You just come out of the woodwork as your project progresses. You can't guarantee they're going to be there. But I would imagine most communities have every skill you need within their community.
Okay, so talk to me about the network. You're going to build up a core, and then are you going to like daisy chain from one house to the next house or the next house, or how? What's the plan?
The plan, it's the network has been designed instead of going in a straight line along a road from one village to another, which we could have done. It's going from farm to farm, so it's zigzagging all the way across the hills, and so the actual core goes to a lot of farms on its way. And it links up all the eight parishes, and at each end it goes into dark fibre, so it's fed from both ends. So if there's an accident, there won't be a train derailment or an explosion, I don't think, but if the fibre's cut through for any reason, the network won't fall down because it's resilient, it's fed at both ends. So the actual design of it's really good. And there's 400 or so properties on that core, and they will be connected with this money that we've got in. As we're digging it, the other routes can start to dig to meet it. Whenever the farmers are ready, the farmers are digging it all in where possible. When it's going under roads or rivers or railways or anything technical, we're using professional contractors. But we're keeping that to the barest minimum, because every time we have to pay somebody, it costs us money and we have to get more shares in. Whereas the farmers aren't getting paid as such, they're getting paid in shares. So for every metre they dig, they get £1.50. Now, for some farmers, they can make a lot of shares putting the fibre in if the fields are nice and straight and fairly big. But for some farmers, with the little pokey paddocks and stone walls and fences and ditches, and it's going to be quite a hard job for them. So they'll really earn the £1.50, whereas some people could make, you know, a few thousand pounds in shares in a week. It's the luck of the draw, really. But
so there's going to be one line from one end meandering over the hills and then ends at another place. So how are you going to splice the cable then into the houses and such?
Well, the fibre itself is in ducting, and each part of the route has different sizes of ducts. So the bit we put in last week was 24 7mm ducts with one central core of 16mm bound into one big fat orange pipe that comes on a roll. And that part of the design was to feed 20 houses at one side of the road and the next bit of the network that moved on to somewhere else. And you go from access chamber to access chamber. So these access chambers, there's all photos on the Flickr site if anybody wants to see them. They're like, you dig a hole, you put this plastic tray in and some gravel, and then you put another tray on, and then you put another tray on, and then you put the concrete top on. So it's like four layers. And inside that, the ducting comes into that access chamber and then into what's called a splice bullet. And these splice bullets are sort of big plastic things, and the ducting goes in, and then things happen inside and different ducts come out. It's all too clever for me, but I know that's what goes in. And then as the ducting goes up the field, you stop where you come to a house and you break out one of those cores of ducting, and then you just leave that and carry on. And then when the house is ready to go on, you dig a little trench to the house and you couple up a 7mm duct to the 7mm duct you've broken out. And that then goes up the person's garden. It can go under the flags or around the duck pond or wherever until it gets into the house. So you drill a hole into the house, pop your little duct through, and then when you're ready and they're all ready to blow, you just blow your fibre from the little access chamber, and the fibre has come from the closest hub. It's all there ready in the access chamber blown, and you just blow it through into the houses.
Fantastic. So what sort of speeds can you expect?
We're not expecting anything. We're getting 1,000 megabits symmetrical.
A gigabyte network, both ways?
Both ways.
Can I move up there, please?
£30 a month. That's what everybody's saying.
You won't. How much?
Afford to live here in a bit. £30 a month.
£30 a month for a gigabit network?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the equipment that goes in your house consists of a battery pack, which will keep your connection up for, they reckon, about 4 hours. I think the guarantee is 2 hours, but you're only talking a watt or something, so it's not going to use anything, really.
Like a UPS or something?
Yeah, it's just a UPS, a battery pack. And that's about the size of a brick and weighs about as much as a brick. And then from that comes your client premise equipment, which again is about the size of a brick, but not as fat. And that screws onto the wall. And so your fibre goes into that. And then you've got 4 1-gig Ethernet ports and 2 phone sockets and N Wi-Fi. So you've got 300 meg Wi-Fi in your house as well. Because that's as fast as Wi-Fi will go at the moment, really, yeah. For homes.
And I guess you can start using colour fiber as well and bring that up to 30 gigabits if you want it.
Right. You want, can't you, once you've got it in your house? That's the thing, you see.
I'm starting to cry here.
But that's the thing. It would cost us the same to put 100 meg network in, because you know, the lights for 100 meg are just as expensive as the lights for a gig. So we might as well light it at a gig and be done, mightn't we?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, some practical things. Firstly, there's some grumpy farmer who doesn't want you going over her land or his land or whatever.
Oh, we've got one of those. Yeah.
And what do you do?
So the grumpy farmer says, oh, no, she says, you'll have to pay me if you want to go over my land. And we said, well, actually, we're not paying anybody. Nobody's getting paid. We're all volunteers, and the farmers are letting us go over the land because they know it's helping the community, and they'll get a good connection. Well, I don't want a connection. I don't have anything to do with computers and things. I'm too old for that. I won't pay if you're going on my land. And we said, no, sorry, we're not paying anybody. Oh, well, you can't come on then. So fair enough. So we go to the next farm and we said, you know, is there any land next to that farm that's yours? And then we can come round that farm to get to you. And she said, oh, of course there is. If you just go through that gate there, you're straight onto my land and you can come to me and then go right past them and carry on up the hill to the next farm. So that's what we do. If they don't want it, it's fine. We don't give them any pressure. It doesn't matter, but they won't get a connection. So we don't leave them any fibres to that property.
And you know, what if they change their mind later on?
If they change their mind as the dig's coming through, which personally I think they will, if we haven't had to reroute too far, or if we can go back to our original route, they will go on, no hard feelings. But if we have to reroute, and if it works out, say, another £20,000, you've got to go on a road or something to get past them. Roads cost a lot of money to trench on a road.
Yeah.
I think we're going to write it into another document, which isn't yet on the website because it's not been, you know, the whole committee has to decide on something and agree before we do anything. We'll just say, in the case of X property, it cost us £20,000 to detour around it. If that property wants a connection in the future, it will cost £20,000. I think that's the only fair way, because a lot of farmers haven't got computers, aren't interested. The kids do it on the next farm or come to the farm. You know, they're not interested. They really aren't, some of them. I mean, some, it's a day-to-day struggle just to keep alive.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
And so if we go to them and we explain what we're doing, and they say, aye, okay, lass, you can go through my fields, but don't come telling me about computers because I don't want to know.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's fair enough. If they let us through, you know, why should they be penalised and everybody else have to pay more just because one person's a bit selfish?
Okay, yeah, I can see that. But also, what if one of the farms gets sold for one reason or another and some enterprising young person decides, well, I've got this cable here now, I can just cut it in two and, you know, be done with it?
What do you mean?
Say the cable's running through Farmer X's land, and Farmer Y buys it and decides that, you know, there's a cable there, I'm just going to dig it up and get rid of it. You're going to have to obviously reroute around that.
Well, it's in our wayleave document that these wayleaves are sort of as legally binding as we can make them without making them 40 pages. The wayleaves are signed off as we go, as the farmer agrees, with maps. So we print them a Google map so they can actually see the colours of the fields and know exactly that we're putting it in the right place they want it. Mm-hmm. They're also given an ordnance survey type printout, and we have a copy, they have a copy with a signed wayleave, and that wayleave goes with their deeds. And so it's the same as if there's a BT line on your land. If you've given wayleaves for that line, you mustn't cut it. Now, if you cut it by accident, then it gets mended. It's as simple as that. But if you say you don't want it on your land anymore, we've put in the wayleaves that you have to give us 12 months' notice to reroute. So if for any reason they didn't want it on the land, and I can't think why on earth anybody wouldn't want it. I'm going to be last. I'm not on the core. You know, we've thought of that possibility. We hope we've thought of everything, but we're always listening in case we've missed something.
I'm just going through here how, listening to quite a lot of these episodes, you know, shows here on the HBR network about broadband and stuff in the US, The communities in the US have often released, and also here in the Netherlands, have sold the rights for networking to cable providers or who else. Do you think that would be an issue for other communities?
I don't really know about other what other communities would do with the networks, but our network can never be sold to a telco that's in it just to make a profit for shareholders or themselves. It can only ever be sold to another community interest company. It's in our rules. It can only ever be a cooperative for the benefit of the community. The only difference is if we went completely bankrupt, it would have to be liquidated and then anybody could buy it. But also in our way leaves, we've got a clause that says if for any reason the company becomes a commercial company, I can't actually remember how it's worded, but it's worded in such a way that if our company barn is not a cooperative anymore, it goes bust and it's taken over, then the farmer then has the right to renegotiate the way leaves, which means that if somebody makes us go bust, mentioning no names, and we're liquidated, then whoever buys the company would then have to pay out millions of pounds to the farmers to be able to operate the network.
And lots and lots and lots of farmers.
To lots of farmers, yeah.
Yes, it'd be a nightmare, actually.
They're giving this way leave because they support the community and they want a good broadband connection, and this is the only way they'll ever get one. But it's a different matter if it's going to be run on a commercial basis. They're entitled to payment for their way leaves.
Okay, how much support have you got from this, from the local government, local communities, schools, businesses?
Plenty of support from the community, massive support from the local businesses. We've got support from the schools because they're paying a lot for their connections at the moment and we can supply it a lot cheaper. We've actually got people who've bought double shares, which means they get a free connection and can give a free connection to somebody less fortunate. Because if you buy £1,500 worth of shares in our company, you get a free connection and a year's free service. So that seems to be what most people have bought. The minimum you can buy is £100. If you buy £500 in this country, you can get 30% tax back on it. So that's a government scheme for high-risk community enterprises like wind farms and broadband and buying the village pub and village shops and things. The government will actually give you 30% of your money straight back as cash. So that's a really good incentive. And a lot of people have said, well, with my extra £1,500 share, you can put the church on or the school on or the chapel on or that little old lady down there on.
Fantastic.
It is. It's brilliant. The community are absolutely brilliant. But that's about the only support we've had from government, is that little perk. It's really, really helped us, as that one thing has really helped.
It has.
Yeah.
I was just looking at your website and the amount of people that seem to be involved, the amount of engineers and whatever, you seem to have an impressive team up there.
We've got a very varied team, and each person has made an invaluable contribution to the project. It could be bringing in their own skill set and opinions and ideas, and the logistics fella is totally brilliant. He is the local tractor mender. He's a mechanical engineer and he mends your Raven. If that goes wonky, he can put cattle grids in for you. He can mend tractors, he can mend cars. He also is our aerial fitter because he's the only qualified person to climb on somebody's roof. And usually when he's up on the roof, he cleans the gutter out and mends the odd slate. And he fits our antennas for the Wi-Fi network. And he's turned into our logistics man. And he organises the taking the deliveries of the cable and all the manholes. And, you know, there's a heck of a lot of stuff being delivered on wagons. And he arranges where it goes in the yard. He's secured as a yard. And stacks it all up. He knows exactly where each reel is because each reel's different, the different cores. And then he gets them to where they've got to be when somebody's starting to dig. And he's absolutely brilliant. You know, the different skills that we've all got. I don't know what my skills are, probably just yapping on. But
you're doing a very good job. There's lots of people listening with bated breath to this. And tell me, is the network being built at the minute?
Yes, we've started building. We, about 10 minutes ago, I was telling you about the way we got going. So we got the share issue sorted, and we had the share launch, and all the people came, and then they started buying shares. And then when we had enough shares, we decided we're going to dig. But once you start to dig, you've actually got to dig something. So we had a dig ceremony with the mayor, the local mayor, and he came and turned the first sod. And I had it all arranged that Spear & Jackson, which is a company that makes spades, would come and bring 200 spades for us. So we could line all the spades up, you know, the community digging for a gig. And but then they couldn't get the spades to us in time. So we just said to the people, come along and bring your own spade. And they did. And 100 and odd of them in a big long line digging, and the mayor turning the first sod. And that was a great publicity exercise. And
I saw the picture on the website, actually.
Yeah. Well, that picture was actually taken by another member of our committee who's really good at taking pictures, Martin. And he put it on Flickr. And we invited all the press, and we invited all the television companies, and we invited all the councillors. None of them came. Just the people came. The community came with the spades. And we got those pictures up, and then all of a sudden, the Mail on Sunday got the story and put it in the Mail, like one of our national weekend newspapers.
Yep.
And then the BBC wanted pictures, and the BBC were ringing up saying, can you get a load of people with spades? And I said, no. I said, we've done that. You were asked to come, and you didn't. And so they had to whistle. So... So that was our dig launch event. So, and then this week it's been on the telly, and we were doing some mole ploughing this week. So I emailed all the telly people again and said, do you want to come? The press, do you want to come? But none of them turned up. So we did this dig, and I live streamed it. You know, have you ever live streamed from your phone?
Yeah, we're well familiar with that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I did. I just live streamed the mole plough.
What's a mole plough?
The mole plough is just one of the ways you can lay the duct in. Uh-huh. So the reel goes on the mole plough. It goes over the top of the mole plough, and at the back, it's like a pneumatic drill.
Oh yeah. I've seen one.
You thread your duct in through it, and it just hammers it down into the ground somehow. It's really good how it does it. And it hardly leaves the mark. It's how I did mine up here when I laid my fibre. It's the same mole plough I used.
So, okay, the main ducting, who exactly is doing that? Are you contracting that out to somebody? Or?
No, the farmers. The farmers can do it if they want to. If they can't, they won't, or they haven't got the equipment, then a neighbouring farmer can do it for them. And if all else fails, then a contractor.
And they're happy to do this on time and... You know.
They seem to be up to now, yeah. We've another one kicking off this next week. He's got his own JCB, which I don't think we'll need very much except for the access chambers there.
Everybody needs a JCB.
Yeah, well, the access chambers are every 500 metres, and I guess he could do one of them in 10 minutes, and you get £50 for an access chamber for putting one of them in. But his friend or his brother-in-law or somebody has two or three different kinds of diggers. And the terrain where he lives is going to need digging. I don't think we'll be able to mole plough up there. And he's kicking off next week. And he's paying his own, either friend or brother or whoever, he's paying them. And then he's claiming the £1.50 in shares. So he'll be out of pocket. And he'll also have shares instead of money in the bank. But he's prepared to do that to get it to his farm.
Yeah, I would be too. And what if, like, there was rock or something?
We've got the equipment to get through rock. When we laid water to our farm, we actually dynamited it. There's always a will. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Where there's a will, there's a relation, that's for sure. This is seriously amazing. I could talk all night to you about this. I'll just tell the listeners, my brother is living outside of a... there was an area designated urban area where the telcos could lease, put down fiber connections, or at least cable connections, or reasonably high network speeds. But he is in the rurally zoned area, which is the other, 100 meters away. And because of that, they have to be supplied by wireless. They're not allowed to run cable out to them. So it's just, what the hell? And there's the government released a 30-year license to this other company. But anyway, since then, it's all been sorted. And he heard today that there's a possibility of some actual cable network coming down to
him. Excellent.
But I have been with him working through the MMDS, the microwave, the Wi-Fi chain mesh networks. And as you say yourself, it's all just a hack unless you got the cable in, fiber in. Did you, is there anybody connected to the network as yet? Is there ones and zeros?
No, we're not going live until the next big event.
Yeah.
We'll be on, we're thinking, we've more or less decided it's the 1st of July, but we're sort of arguing amongst ourselves because me and another couple think it should be the 4th of July, Bastille Day and Independence Day, the revolt of peasants.
I like that.
But apparently these, the dark fibre that we're leasing straight into Peering at Manchester, the contracts you start paying on the 1st of the month. And so we'd lose 3 days connectivity if we went on the 4th of July. But I still think it makes a point, doesn't it, the 4th of July?
You could always announce it on the 4th of July. The first 3 days are testing.
Yeah, we could test it for 3 days, couldn't
yes,
we? Make sure it works before we do anything.
Exactly. And what's the story to get the backhaul? How does that work? Where are you plugging into?
We're plugging into the GEO line. And we're plugging at Quorma, which is the sort of...
You're going to have to tell us what a GEO line is, because...
GEO is just a company.
Okay.
It's a private company that owns dark fibre.
Okay.
You sort of limited the... There's one on the railways that is, I think it's called Global Crossing.
Yep.
There's Virgin Fibre that goes all over the place.
Yeah.
From town to town. There's no rural customers on it, but there is dark fibre in the Dogs. And there's another company called GEO. There's one called Cable and Wireless, I think.
Yeah.
And you've got to really find the one that's in your area and then you're not digging too far to get to it.
Yeah.
And the one that seemed to work best for us was this GEO one. And it's laid on a gas pipeline. So when the gas was put in to go from city to city, it came right across our valley. And on top of it, somebody had the sense to lay a fibre duct.
God, pity there are more of those people around.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it was GEO or another company called NTL that later went bust. I don't know the history of it, but it belongs to GEO and they're leasing us a dark fibre to Manchester, to the Peering Point. That's our closest Peering Point. So you rent it by the metre, this stuff. So the closer you are to a Peering Point, the cheaper your connection will be, I suppose. And then you work out how many customers you need to be able to pay for it.
Yeah.
And we need at least 600 customers. And we've got the potential on phase one to have 1,500 customers.
That's the business. That is the business. You're saying this, you're taking two connection points. Are they going to be both at the same place? Or does it do a big loop?
It does a big loop. The network itself is 3/4 of the circle.
Yeah.
And then the dark fibre finishes the circle.
Okay.
And that it's resilient then. Yeah.
Okay. And it's the same provider for both, yeah?
Yeah, it's the same pipeline actually. Yeah, GEO pipeline. Yeah.
And what speeds do they offer you? Is there limits on that?
There's no limit. It's fibre. You can light it at terabits if you want. So we're getting 40 gig in. So that's what's going into the network.
Well, and you, but surely you'd have to pay more for... At some point, you need to go to a tier one provider or a tier three provider.
I think that's what we're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, but
don't get me on the complicated stuff now. But
okay.
It's EdgeIX or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So we're straight into Peering with Google and the BBC and everything.
God.
Yeah.
Oh. I know where I'm going on my holidays this year.
Well, you're very welcome. You see, it's really increasing tourism already because they're all coming to stay in local places to find out about it.
Yeah.
So we've had 4 lots of network people staying in the local pub, which is really good for bed and breakfast. Just think how much the holiday cottages will be able to charge.
Yeah, exactly.
A
I mean,
good
I'm.
connection.
I keep. I you know, I, Ireland has. I come from Ireland originally, and there's a lot of rural decline there. And I mean, you could, you know, €5 and a cup of coffee would buy you a housing estate, you know.
Yeah.
And these places are in the most beautiful set.
Exactly,
and, you know, for a few grand, you can buy a house or a whole series of houses with your own harbour onto the Shannon, and it, you know, gorgeous day. Why wouldn't you live somewhere that's nice and peaceful if you can telecommute?
Yeah.
Right, well, anyway, I'm actually about serious about this. Okay, you've done an awful lot of work. Well done to your team. What if somebody listening to this show has the idea, well, I want to do something similar myself, and they've done a lot of work. Can I reuse your work?
Of course you can. Of course you can. That's the whole idea. Once we've got all the bugs out of it, because there's still obstacles, we don't know what they are yet. It's just like when we're digging along a line and we hit solid rock, like you say, but there's always a way either round it, through it, or over it. And it's the same with any other obstacles. We just have to deal with them when we come to them. But everything will be documented as we go along, and other communities who want to have a go, they can adapt our plans to suit their environment and their people and, you know, their wealth, because some communities are wealthier than others. This project would have been flying by now if it was down south. You know, the shares would have come in thick and fast, but this is a very poor area. You know, people have had to save up to get their share.
Yeah. Very, very impressive. I'll tell you, it's an inspiring project. Do you have any option for somebody like me to buy a meter of fiber or something just for the crack as a donation to the project?
Hey, that's a good idea. Oh, why didn't we think of that? Flipping Laura.
All you need to do is put a PayPal button up on your website. Sell us a meter of fiber.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fantastic? I mean, even if it was only £1, you'd only need 1 million people to do it to get £1 million, wouldn't you?
Not a bother. It's, actually, start a Kickstarter campaign, and you've got sheep up there, yeah?
We're a dairy farm, but yes, yeah. We have sheep.
You could like a little jiffy bag full of sheep hair with a little bit of fibre or something in it, you know, like 10 centimetres of fibre, charge them $1 for that, or $10 for something else.
Yeah,
put the name in a manhole or something.
Yeah.
Name the manholes for $100.
Oh, God, I wish I'd talked to you sooner. So a manhole is $100.
Yeah, get your own manhole named after you or somebody else.
Yeah. Oh, ace. Oh, wait till I tell the committee about this. So a manhole's $100. So yeah. A meter of fiber is a fiber.
Yeah, give me like for a tenner, I'd like a, you know, like 10 centimeters of fiber and, you know, some sheep hair or photograph of a cow or something.
Oh, the admin on that could be horrendous, actually. How could we do it? It'd have to be a photograph online with your name on it, wouldn't
it? Yeah. Well, I mean, all you need to do is you could donate like a, you know, a your name in a bottle. So somebody could buy, like, I don't know, for $10, put their name into a bottle, and you bury the bottle along the pipe somewhere.
Plastic bottle.
Well, it could be a glass bottle. Could be just in the fibre, wrap it around with a bit of sellotape.
Permanent marker.
Yep, that'll work.
Most of the ducks we use in a bright orange.
Perfect.
So if we use a black permanent marker, write the names on the duct, film the duck going in, those people will then see where their names are buried.
Yep.
On a meter of fibre.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Right. Have we got anything for £1,000? What can they have?
They
could have the cabinet.
If they get £1,000, what you do is you, when they come over to visit, you put them in the B&B, and they get a free night in the B&B, free pub, and a tour.
Free pub, a tour.
Yeah, a night in the B&B, a romantic weekend up there. Yeah.
No, that's going to cost £200 or £300 to do that.
Well, then make it £2,000. Oh, make it £5,000. Come on.
All right, £5,000 for the luxury weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, weekend. So what for a grand?
Ooh, let me see. What would be good for?
What about the hub? What about? Well, I know. What about? We've got five village nodes.
Yeah.
One of them's inside an institute, and there's three of them that are outside in big cabinets.
Yeah, you put the name on a plaque and call them after that, the nodes.
So are they the £1,000 ones?
Yeah. Well, how many do you have?
We've got three.
Oh, you want to charge more than £1,000 for that?
Well, they'll have to be 5,000 too.
You can put an auction up or something there.
Oh, auction. Oh, do you want to be on our committee? This is how we get people on the committee. We wait till we see a bright spark and we nap.
I fear I have enough on my plate at the moment.
Oh, what a good idea. Right, I will run that by the committee.
And you can have simple ones in there. There are sheep farmers, are there?
Pardon?
You have cows, do you?
We have cows on our farm, yeah. We're okay. A dairy farm.
Then they can, you have calves, no doubt.
Yeah, calves.
Yeah, then you sell for $5 or something to get to name a calf.
$5, name a calf. Well, it's nothing really to do with fibre, is it, that one?
Yeah. Well, it can be. I mean, does it matter? They sleep on the fibre. It's supporting the network. It's all about the community.
All right, fibre, digital calf.
And you can also put it out for people that, to donate whatever for a school. If you've got schools in the area that they can also have the feel good to, provide it for the schools.
Local businesses,
that sort of thing.
I think we've more or less got the schools covered with free connections now with the generosity of the locals, really. What we want to do is we want to put webcams in the churches.
Yeah, on the churches.
So inside the churches so that the people, because around here there's lots of church-going farmers and they've gone to church all their lives, these people, and now they're getting too old to get to church and they don't like bothering the kids to run them to church.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be a nuisance and they're really a bit too feeble and poorly to get to church on time. And to kneel down and to get in and out of the car, it hurts them because they're really getting frail now.
Yeah.
And they miss church and they miss the social aspect of church and seeing everybody and seeing what app they've got on and seeing if they're looking well or seeing if they're walking without a stick. And they're into going to church, these people, and they can't get there anymore. And we thought if we could get webcams in the churches, they could watch the church service every week on the tellies.
Very good. I like it.
Yeah.
I also if you're doing that, put the web cameras up on the top. We had that in a previous place I worked, had a very high tower, and people could, it was a motorized one, so they could move it around.
Oh, right.
Nice. Listen, this is going to, we have no time restrictions here in HBR, so I'm going to keep talking if you've got the time. I saw on your website that local people will be also learning how to splice cable and whatever. If you've got that amount of data available to you, every farm could actually have a data center in it.
Yes.
Do you have, because you could actually get, I know there's a few hosting companies who would be happy to host servers over there for people.
Yeah. We would actually like to build our own data center one day, but we're concentrating on the job in hand, which is
get local
the actual core network and getting the funding in to build the rest of the phase one network, because I think it's 42 more routes we have joining into the core. And on those routes are a lot of farmers who are desperate for a connection.
Yeah.
So, there's the core route to do and get it lit on the 1st of July. And then as that is getting built, all the other places see it's getting built, know it's happening, because a lot of people, don't believe we can do it. So we've got to do it to prove we can do it. Then they will then buy shares and they will start to dig to the core. And that'll take the best part of a year altogether to get this phase one done. Already we're being bombarded with requests from the phase two area and two villages, I think, have already been accepted into phase one because they've raised enough money themselves to pay for us to get to them, if you know what I mean.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and one was the chap on the BBC news story the other night. He's a film producer, and if he makes even a small film, it takes all night and the next day to upload.
Oh.
So he's having to pay couriers to take DVDs everywhere, with his work, or post DVDs. So he's desperate for it, and he's explained to all his neighbours why they should do it, and he's very good at explaining it. In fact, we need him on the committee, actually. They got in touch with Barry, who's the man who's designed the network. He's the real brains behind it all. And he worked out how much it would cost to get that village on and how many houses would have to be on it to make it viable. And he told them, and they did it. So they've been accepted. And there's another one that's almost accepted, but they just haven't raised enough money yet. And if they do, they'll be on phase one. So
fantastic.
It's a case of you've got to help yourself, haven't you? And all the people have realised from what we've told them at meetings that this isn't somebody coming and doing it for you. If you want it, you have to do it yourselves.
But I'm a farmer out there in the middle of nowhere. What do I need to do? How would I go about doing what it is that needs to be done? Do I need to wait for the cable to come to the next farmer, or
you have to take an interest?
Yeah.
And you have to read your newsletters, and you have to register that you're interested, and then we know you are.
Okay, so I'm interested. But
the route walkers will say, where do you want the cable in your land? And they'll be given a plan of where we think it should go. But what we're finding is the farmer knows best. So if we've drawn a route down the left-hand side of his field, he'll say, you don't want to be going down that side because there's solid rock down that side, or there's a ditch down that side, or it's all wet down that side. Come round this side, it's a lot better land.
Yeah,
that's the way we go. Or he'll say, you can't go that way because you'll cut all my drains. You have to go this way. And so we do what the farmer wants. So that's his first contact with us, really. And then he gets more interested. Then he goes and has a toot to see what the other farms are doing and how the digging's going on. Then he thinks to himself, he'll think, I can't do that. They're going to have to do it for me. Or I'll go around and see Fred next door with the digger and ask him to do mine. Or he'll say, that looks easy. I'll do that.
Can they have the trench done beforehand?
Pardon?
Can they have the trench done beforehand? Or
what do you mean, can they have it done?
Does it have to be that farm A is done and then farm B is done?
No. It's just like a jigsaw puzzle. Any bit can be done at any time. Like I say, we're concentrating on the core, but if any of the subroutes wanted to get going, they could do. And once the core is anywhere near them, they can start to dig to join it, but we can't afford to finance them all at the moment, you see. But this stuff is plug and play. So it's all compression joints, just like plastic central heating pipe.
So, right.
There's a skill to it. You can't have corners and bends.
Yeah.
And it's got to be laid completely level and straight and flat. Yeah. But as long as they come and watch what one farmer's doing and make sure it's, you know, they know what they're doing, that it's completely within the skill set of any farmer who's dug a drain.
So it's within, it's 25 metres of straight, flat, and then you go to a manhole and then you go on to the next one and it's daisy chained the whole way along.
The ducting is plug and play, but it's 500 meters between each manhole cover.
500 meters, yeah.
500 okay. meters. And then from the main duct, it can be another kilometer or two or three or four to the farm.
Yeah, fantastic.
But we've tried to get as many in on the core route as we possibly can, and we've purposely chosen the worst bit of our area to take the core through. It's the roughest, wildest, bleakest terrain.
And why is that?
Because they're the most desperate people.
Oh, yeah, of course. And then, of course, once you've done that, everything is easy after that. It
should get easier,
yeah.
Until you get into the villages and you get somebody saying, you can't go there because that's where our dog's buried.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure there'll be lots of different problems in the villages.
Exactly. And the last few miles, I guess, to get to the termination point, how is that going to work out for you?
The termination points are actually in the villages.
Oh, okay.
They're actually on the farms and in the communities that we've chosen. I'm not sure how far we have to dig at the north point, but I think it's only a few metres. But I know it at the south point at Cuomo, we're 25 metres from our hub to the geo pipeline.
Fantastic. Brilliant. This is seriously a very inspirational project, I must say. I'm very impressed by all the documents that you've put up, and I'm glad to see that you're making them available. And I do hope that at least at least over the weekend, we'll talk about putting at least a PayPal button up so you can at least be getting donations.
It won't be over the weekend. I've got to run it by the committee.
Obviously, but
you know, we've all got to agree to something before we do it.
And I'm very glad to hear that as well. Listen, Chris.
I'm telling you now, we're going to do it. I'll nag him till we do it. I think it's a brilliant idea. Thank you ever so much.
Not a bother. I look forward to getting a photo of my meter of cable.
meter of cable? Well, I'll have to be having a fiver off you off your PayPal then.
Not a bother.
It's a meter of my cable.
Do you take euros? listen, Chris, again, thank you very much for coming on the show. I hope this is inspirational for a lot of people. I know that Lost in Bronx has got a show in the queue about the difficulty of accessing the internet where he lives. I don't know how applicable this will be to him, but at least it's food for thought. It's food for thought for me for when I go home. I intend to bring a lot of this documentation down to my local councillor.
Well, you've got to share the knowledge, haven't you? If everybody shared the knowledge, we wouldn't all have to reinvent the wheel, would we?
It's what you're saying makes perfect sense. Mm. So it does.
Well, another thing while I'm on, I might as well do a shameless plug here.
Please do.
I was contacted, I'm on Twitter, and I was contacted on Twitter by this chap who's doing some work for the Digital Assembly in Europe. Have you heard of the Digital Assembly in Europe?
Please tell our listeners all about it.
Well, it's Neelie Kroes, who's the Vice President of the European Assembly. And they asked me, because I'm active on Twitter, to be what's called an online animator. And my job is to get people talking about high-speed broadband. I'm not quite 100% sure of what I'm supposed to do yet, because I've never done anything like this before. But what they want me to do is tweet things and use a certain hashtag, which is hashtag DA12BB.
D Delta Alpha 1 2 BB. Bravo.
Yeah. And so I tweet with that hashtag anything that I can find to do with super fast broadband. And they harvest all these hashtags. And then what I'm supposed to do, I'm supposed to engage people who write these blogs on superfast broadband and ask them how Europe can help roll out high-speed broadband to all the people of Europe. And that's my job. So that's a shameless plug for what I'm actually doing as well as BAM.
Are you getting paid for that?
I'm supposed to be getting paid. I've never actually seen anything, but I would do it anyway, because this is our chance for the grassroots people to make the voices heard, because I'm sure lots of people are convinced we already have broadband, and it is important to do the job properly and not just patch up and get make do with other solutions. Everybody needs a fibre. And I think the best way to do it is to do it to the rural people first and let new networks like BARN start up and stand or fall on their merits. I don't mean they should be propped up with enormous amounts of public money, but I do think, you know, they should be given a chance to thrive. Anything to do with innovation should be given a chance, and that's where Europe should be spending its support and information and knowledge and funding on things like that, rather than patching up and bonding copper pairs together to get a couple of meg up a hillside. I think that's a waste of public money. So that's why I'm active in this area.
And for the listeners who might not be familiar with Neelie Kroes, who is one of my, she's a Dutch politician and a favourite of mine. She was the woman behind the Microsoft lawsuits here in the EU that got the Samba protocols released to the Samba team. The CIFS protocols opens as an open standard. She's also heavily involved in getting rid of mobile roaming charges across Europe, and she's also pushing forward an idea now where regardless of where you are in Europe, your telephone bill will be the same regardless of which country you go into. So needless to say, she is
heroes from the sound of it.
she is a formidable woman, and it's always quite interesting to hear anything that she puts her mind to. So if you can, please use that hashtag. It will be in the show notes for this episode. Just one thing that struck me while I was talking to you there. If you're setting up this company, could you also not, and you're rolling out all these fibers all over the place, could you also not have Pico GSM transmitters in people's houses and run your own mobile phone network?
It is one of the things on our wish list. We were thinking of femto cells, really, but I have heard of pico cells, but I'm not the technical person.
No, no.
So I don't really know the difference between a pico cell and a femto cell.
I wouldn't know the difference either, I'm just saying.
Well, the idea is that we get hold of some of these things. I know Vodafone do them in this country to boost their signals. But we've a mixture here. We've got Orange, O2, Vodafone, T-Mobile. So how do you actually do it? I'm not quite sure. But the theory is that every one of these fibre farms that are on hills and dales all over the place, if they all had one of these transmitters, that means that the area we live in, where none of us can get mobile signals in most of the places, it means our farmers are safer on the tractors and up the fells, because there will be a ubiquitous mobile connection everywhere.
I could possibly
do it with a Wi-Fi cloud as well, so that things like smartphones would automatically have a signal and connect wherever the farmer is. Because they use CBs at the moment, radios.
That is absolutely fantastic. There is by the way, there's an open source telecommunications project, two of them, where they, in the same way that you're simplifying the network down to using fiber and not worrying about all the legacy stuff, there's a simplified GSM network with relatively cheap equipment that you can do that sort of thing using open source Linux servers on the back end.
Right. Well, have you got any names or links?
I shall send you some links.
Yeah. I will run it past the committee.
I'm familiar with the. We're getting very used to this committee.
These things will come. I mean, if we build this network, these things will come. There will be people within the community who say, let's do this. And we say, crack on there. Build yourself a business out of it. Make yourself some money. Bring employment into the community. Do whatever you want. This is your network. Use it.
It is. It really is just the electrification of the nation, really, isn't it? Yeah. It should really be everybody's right to have just a big fat pipe that they can run their own server and do your own thing in your own area.
Yeah.
Chris, it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you. It's been a pleasure. I'm looking at the map here of Lancashire, and I see that Blackpool is not too far away.
Actually see Blackpool from where we dug the first sod.
Do you?
Jubilee Tower. We dug the first sod at Jubilee Tower. And we looked across and we could see Blackpool Tower and we could almost see the Isle of Man, but it was a bit too misty.
How come Blackpool isn't part of Lancashire?
Pardon?
Is Blackpool part of Lancashire?
Yes, Blackpool's part of Lancashire, yeah.
Google Maps seems to have it outside of Lancashire.
No, Blackpool's in Lancashire.
Okay, good stuff. Because there is a team of fellow open sourceians who are over there in the U-Cubed event. And they're promoting free and open technologies as well. So I'll have them get in touch with you as well.
Okay.
Super duper. Listen, Chris, thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening. Big thumbs up to everybody over there. And I seriously do intend to come over to the UK, drop by and have a pint.
You're very welcome anytime you want to come. Make it after the 1st of July and then you can test it out.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
Fingers crossed we don't get held up with any grotty weather, but hopefully 1st of July we'll be off.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris.
It's a pleasure.
And all the information and show notes that and links to the various different websites and the documents will be in the show notes for this episode.
And you'll send me a link.
Oh, I will, of course.
Okay.
And thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.